It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
With me, Ernest Hancock, here in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, well, my next guest, Clint Bollock, is director of the Scharf Norton Center for Constitutional Litigation at the Goldwater Institute. And we first knew, got to meet Clint when he moved to Phoenix at our first Freedom Summit, freedomsummit.com, coming up first weekend in December here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, it's going to be lovely. Go to freedomsphoenix.com and I'm sorry, freedomsummit.com, and you'll get all the goodies on this year's guest. Well, Clint was one of our first guests. He was associated with the Institute for Justice. In fact, he was a co-founder and former vice president of the Institute for Justice, and he's worked on educational freedoms and all kinds. We've got a long list of Clint Bollock going out fighting for freedom. Well, let me tell you what, given all of a sudden he's got a lot of attention because he went and got tattooed. No, you got to tell us all about the tattoos, Clint. I want to know tattoo. Why'd you get tattooed?
Well, Ernie, it's a pleasure to be with you. Here at the Goldwater Institute, we have a litigation program. We sue bureaucrats. I am very honored to be able to do that for a living. And one of the cases that we took on was the case of a tattoo studio in Tempe, which had been given a permit for its business, complied with all of the laws, invested over $20,000 in the building, and then the city of Tempe yanked its permit. So we went to bat for them, and I vowed that if we won that case, that I would get inked. And that is exactly what happened a couple of weeks ago, because we did win the case, and Body Accents Tattoo and Piercing Studio is in business in Tempe, Arizona.
Well, and you have it on your right index finger. Is that your typing finger? Is that what's up with
that? That is right. I am a one-finger typist, and I have a nice, fresh tattoo of a scorpion on my typing finger.
Now, why a scorpion and why there? What, you know, you're stinging the man with your finger? I mean, what's going on?
Yep, that's exactly right. It's a little desert creature with a powerful sting, and I hope that I can live up to that definition as well when it comes to suing bureaucrats.
You know, I've yet to get inked. You know, a couple of my kids have tattoos, little ones and stuff, and I'm like, you know, if I was to get one, what would it be? I mean, I can associate myself with all kinds of different artwork, and I'm just am proud of a lot of them, but I'm just, you know, I wouldn't know what I do. I guess if you're stinging the man with your finger, you know, that's good enough. You know? So, but, you know, let's go ahead and talk about some of your other activities when it comes to suing the man on behalf of business and so on. I remember around the country, the Institute for Justice had done a lot of things, and you brought it to Arizona, and your expertise is now with the Goldwater Institute. Tell me a little bit about the Scharf Norton Center for Constitutional Litigation, because that's relatively new. They decided they're going to start, you know, going after the man. Tell me about it.
Well, we're the litigation center is a little over 3 years old, and of course the Goldwater Institute is a quarter of a century old. It has been the state's leading taxpayer watchdog for many years, and has been very influential in policy reports and that sort of thing. But a few years ago, our president, Darcy Olson, took a page from Ronald Reagan. Reagan once said, if you can't make them see the light, make them feel the heat. And so we got into the litigation business, and this is the first state organization on the free market side of the political spectrum to open a litigation center. Now, several other states have followed our lead, and I expect that more will as well, but we're focusing primarily, not exclusively, but primarily on the state constitution, which gives us even more protections than the federal constitution does. And for too long, conservatives and libertarians really ignored the state constitutions, focusing on the federal constitution. But we have protections in our constitution that have not been vindicated. And now that's exactly what the Goldwater Institute is doing.
Yeah, the Arizona state constitution, if you read it straight through, I mean, we were, you know, one of the last states. We were the 48th state. We were over 100 and whatever years of experience before Arizona decided to become a state and write their constitution. And you had some experience. And if you read it, these pioneer, Wild West guys out there going, wasn't as wild as they'd have you believe, but it certainly was pioneering. And they wrote a pretty good constitution. I've used it in several cases.
Yes, it's considered a progressive era constitution, but it was during the time of the progressive era when progressives were still very skeptical about government power. And in particular, they were skeptical about the combination of government power and business interests. So there are all sorts of provisions in there, including one that we litigated successfully in the Arizona Supreme Court earlier this year, that prohibits gifts by subsidy or otherwise to individuals or corporations. And that, essentially, is a prohibition against corporate subsidies. If only we had a gift clause in the U.S. Constitution, we would not be seeing a lot of what the Obama administration has been doing by way of corporate bailouts. But here in Arizona, they are now against the law.
Well, they had all kinds of prohibitions. That never stopped them. I give you the eminent domain. You know, the Kelo decision had an impact here in Arizona. There's a lot of changes that were done here because of that.
Well, you know, while the Kelo case was going on and was lost in the U.S. Supreme Court, we were litigating a case on behalf of Randy Bailey, the owner of a brake shop. Some of your listeners may remember that case. And the city of Mesa decided to take his family-owned brake shop and give it, along with a $2 million subsidy, to a hardware store that wanted to expand at that location. And our Constitution says that private property shall not be taken for private use. And at the very same time as the U.S. Supreme Court was not enforcing the U.S. Constitution with regard to eminent domain, our Court of Appeals struck down that abuse of eminent domain. And so Randy Bailey is still selling brakes at Country Club in Maine in Mesa. And as you note, in response to that decision and the Kelo decision, the voters of Arizona, by a 3-1 margin, passed Prop 207, which is the strongest protection of private property rights in the entire country. So, you know, if you're a freedom-loving American and you want to find a state to live in, it's Arizona.
Well, that doesn't mean that we're out of the woods yet.
That's right.
But we got a lot of other threats to our individual freedom here. It keeps us busy. And one of the reasons why we have such a good reputation here and the people have risen up is because of people like Clint Bolick and a lot of other libertarians been doing a lot of hard work for a long time, which we'll talk about more in the next segment. We come back with Clint Bolick from the Goldwater Institute in just a little bit.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
My shoulder. As I'm getting older, your people get colder. Most of us only care about money making. Selfishness got us following the wrong direction. Wrong information always shown by the media. Negative images is the main criteria. Infecting the young minds faster than bacteria. Kids wanna act like what they see in the cinema. Whatever happened to the values of humanity? Whatever happened to the fairness and equality? Instead of spreading love, we're spreading animosity. Lack of understanding leading us away from unity. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling under. That's the reason why sometimes I'm feeling down. It's no wonder why sometimes I'm feeling under. Gotta keep my faith alive, so love is found. Ask yourself,
where is the love? Where is the love?
Oh, the love's right here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, with my good mentor and someone that can help me through this, Clint Bullock. You know, I'm so glad that you came to Arizona, Clint, because I know you brought with you a fire and a focus that needs to be utilized, and it always to my benefit when I have somebody out slapping around the man, because it's one less thing I got to do. You know what I mean?
Ernie, I'm back at you on that, because I don't know what Arizona would be like without you.
Less free.
Yes, indeed.
This is, you know, that's one thing I wanted to talk to you about. You know, when you came to Arizona in the early part of this last decade, in 2001, I think, it was about the time you came. It was right at 9/11, you know.
Yeah.
You came to Arizona, you go, woo, I'm glad I'm not back east. So this is, a lot of things has happened here that... The one thing that you have probably a big benefit here in Arizona is that for a decade or more, Arizona had been given a lesson in a lot of these things. At least they understood the language from a lot of libertarian campaigns, you know, a lot of activism, a lot of lawsuits. At least the people and even the media at least understood the definition of the words that you were using. Now, whether they agreed with you or how much they lied in their reports and so on, that's a whole nother thing. But they knew what the heck you were talking about. And you've had quite a bit of successes here on a lot of levels that you may not have gotten in other parts of the country. You kind of get that assessment?
No question about it. Even though, obviously, Arizona does have its flaws and there's a lot of work left to do, it really is still the land of Goldwater. And you're absolutely right about that. One good example is school choice. It is such a threatening concept in other states. And here, it really is no big deal. You know, I mean, people almost take it for granted. The notion that you get to choose the best school for your kid is not considered a radical notion here in Arizona as well. And I can't think of a single other state where that is true. And I've worked for school choice all over the country.
So let me explain to the audience how this, when I pulled my children out, I have four children, my oldest, I think, was in third grade, and it was just bad. I mean, it got so bad, we could not possibly do worse having them sit at home and watching Barney. I mean, you know, it could not be any worse. So what we did is, beginning of the school year, I made the decision in May at the end of the previous school year, and this is like 94, I think, or so, and I went into the office, and of course they knew me, I had four kids, and I go and I say, hello, can I borrow that pad? And it's one of those while you were out pink phone message pads, right? I tore one off. Can I use that pen? Thank you. And I put it on the back and I go, to whom it may concern, Hancock kids aren't going to school anymore. You know, boom, handed it back, walked out, never went back. Because there was some provision in the law you had to notify somebody. It was kind of vague. And I go, okay, that's good enough here. Done. You know? And I just never went back. And I'm just so glad. My kids are now grown. My youngest is 20. And my life is so much better by yanking them out of that on so many levels. But I want to talk to you about some other stuff. We have here in Arizona, how far off am I to say that as bad as the sixth largest economy in the world, California, and how bad they are, Arizona per capita, I think we have a bigger debt per person here in the state government than anywhere else in the nation. How far off am I?
Ernie, you're absolutely right. Just today I saw a map that was put out by the National Conference of State Legislators, and Arizona has the dubious distinction of being number one in the nation in terms of its per capita debt. And when we are in worse shape than California, we're in really bad shape.
And that's just by what they admit to. There's a bunch of other hidden stuff. You know, two of my lawsuits I went to the Supreme Court on just to bring attention to this balanced budget thing, because I knew they're lying sacks of snot, and I'd hammer on these guys. And this is, and I know you guys, yeah, that'd be good and prudent. You know, you might do that for PR, but you think that's something worth doing now? I mean, it's so bad. I mean, I don't know what recourse would you have? I mean, would they go, oh, okay, you're right, and now what? I mean, what?
Well, our state constitution prohibits state debt in excess of $350,000, which is a very prudent thing that the framers of our Constitution did. Unfortunately, the courts have completely ignored that. And basically, they have defined debt in ways that if you or I attempted to define debt that way, we would go to jail. And so the state is ringing up just a crushing debt. And one of the reasons we have been keeping a very, very close eye on this at the Goldwater Institute with the possibility of filing a lawsuit. But the last thing that we want to do is file a lawsuit that is going to lead to massive tax increases. And, you know, right now, I think there's a tremendous risk, especially now that Governor Brewer has the taste of tax increase in her mouth. You know, I think it's very dangerous to go down that road.
You know, I want to give you an opportunity to comment on something you know is near and dear to my heart, is that if you're going to have this electoral process, if you're going to use initiative, if you're going to, you know, be trying to influence politicians and run off and all that kind of stuff, you know, my whole thing is I don't have any faith in the actual electoral process itself with the computer, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, is Goldwater Institute ever going to address that one of these years?
Well, you know, there's a variety of ways to attack that. And the first thing that we did in that regard is to attack subsidies for politicians. I realize that's just one part of it. But certainly I agree that, you know, that our electoral system does not produce positive results in many instances.
That we know of. We never know. Hell, I could have won five times already. And don't even know about it.
Exactly. And, you know, the last thing we should be subsidizing with our tax dollars is politicians. And I'm happy to say that we got a very significant part of the Clean Elections Law struck down in the federal district court and enjoined for this year, so taxpayers are not going to be sending their tax dollars in the amount of last elections.
Well, this election cycle, we have, you know, Jan Brewer, which was Secretary of State, took over governor from Janet Napolitano when she went to be head of the Gestapo. Then we had Terry Goddard. He's a Democrat candidate, and he's Attorney General. Then we have a Green and a Libertarian Party candidate, and Libertarians, Barry Hess. Well, you know, Libertarians don't participate in this thing and so on, but all we get for all the millions of dollars that the taxpayers fund this, we get one televised debate. One
yes.
debate. That's all we get. That's it.
But
seriously,
boy, was that an entertaining debate?
Yeah, I know. You know what he's talking about is Jan Brewer. She just, because Barry Hess, you know, he really hammered it in the opening, saying, "Look, I know where this is going." You know, and she, her whole opening was exactly what he was making fun of. So she had a long, thoughtless pause, as he put it. You know, and it made news all over. But the thing is that, you know, we're always going to have the problem I have with this is there is the assumption that the American people, and certainly the people here in Arizona, are too stupid to make the right decision, and I don't believe it. I don't think they're accurately being represented. And I've been going after this for now. I'm to the point to where you're still voting. I mean, if you think voting is going to make you free, you have not been paying attention. That's why I am so encouraged by you guys taking it to the courts and educating the people on just how bad these guys are. And that's
Ernie,
what you'll keep doing, I hope.
I so appreciate that.
And hopefully you'll keep doing it. And when you got more time, when you come back in the future, I'd like to talk about so many other things.
I would love to do that, and I appreciate the opportunity today and the support of you and your listeners.
It's our pleasure. Clint Bullock from the Goldwater Institute. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Let's get ready to rumble!
I don't know against who. Who do I want to rumble against? Yeah, there are those that just want to be left alone, and there are those that just won't leave them alone. And if you find that the man's not leaving you alone, well, then a lot of times, instead of fighting him, you just go somewhere else. Or where else is there to go? Is there someplace else? I'm going to go away from you. Is there the long arm of find me anywhere? I don't know. That's what we're going to talk about. This segment is Max Marty is going to represent the, getting away. Seasteading Institute of Sunnyvale, California. Seasteading. Tell me what seasteading is, Max. I'm all ears, man.
Hi there, Ernie. Good
Hello.
To be on the show. So, seasteading is, so imagine for a moment that you yourself have a great idea for some sort of political system you want to see, maybe one you'd want to see here in this country, maybe you'd want to see something in a different country, but you have a way that you believe that social, legal, economic, and political policy should be set. Where do you go right now to see that happen?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I got to make one. How do we do that?
Right, exactly. Right now there's nowhere to go unless you you want to, have a revolution or win a war or win a national election. But, we're trying to create a world, a system, in which anybody who has ideas of this sort can, if they have some capital, if they have some money, go out to the ocean, buy one of these platforms, and try out a system that they think would work better. And much like in a market, if you can convince other people that your product, your service, your government can do better than whatever they're dealing with right now, then you can attract customers, and in this case, you can create a new society.
Okay, let me go ahead and preface it. We're going to spend some time. We got plenty of time. We're going to go ahead and do a 90-minute here. I got you until for 90 minutes, right?
Yep.
Okay, so we're going to dissect this. I crammed everybody else in the first half of the show. So now we're going to do 90 minutes. We're going to talk about freedom. And, you know, my thing has been we were big supporters of Spaceship One and all that and going to space and privatizing. And we're going to space and government's not invited because we're thinking that just might be how far we have to go to get away. But, you know, there's an opportunity. You're going, well, you know, there until recently there used to be even some islands that weren't claimed by anybody. But they're going, no, man. If it's above sea level, it's ours to somebody. I mean, they're going, no, they claimed everything. Okay, fine. So here we have the concept of what if we built this big, giant city, island, floating, pyloned into the coral, whatever the heck, out in the middle of the nothing. Then can we be left alone? Can we? Now, that's the first question I have for you. What are the legal ramifications for this? Is it just the big country with the big destroyer or the submarine say, we rule you, and guess what? You're not free? I mean, what is the legal ramifications of going on and building a city out in the middle of nothing?
Well, in general, the answer is yes. Most countries think that as long as you're some vessel, something just floating out in the ocean and not part of some other recognized country, that they can do with you whatever they please. If they want to board you, if they want to go in there and examine what you're carrying, if they want to take over your vessel, because they say that you might have drugs, of course, might have drugs, even though they have to prove that you do, but whatever justification that they can muster is what they will use to get aboard whatever structure or vessel you have in the water.
Okay, they who? I mean, is it just the United States claims this? Is it some anybody with a flag can, you know, board your vessel if they got a big enough gun on the bow? I mean, what gives them the jurisdiction or the legal remedy? I don't even understand what they claim to be able to do it.
So the United States is one of the more egregious violators in this sense, right? They're the ones who tend to go very far outside their territorial waters to try to find, usually what they're claiming is they're looking for drugs. But they'll go all around the world boarding vessels that they feel are stateless vessels or that they feel like they have some evidence, and it doesn't really have to be very good evidence, but it has to be somebody said something about this vessel out there, and the vessel has to be an unprotected vessel. What I mean by unprotected is not flying the flag of some recognized country. When you're doing that, you're outside the scope of international law, you're outside the scope of U.S. diplomatic relations with any country. They don't feel like they could board your vessel and have to have trouble with, France or Norway or whatever part. So they will feel free to go ahead and do that. So essentially, they'll consider you a pirate if you're not flying some country's flag.
So what do you got to do? The first thing you have on your platform is a 16-incher? You know, your ion cannon plasma phaser ray? I mean, what is it that you got to – is that the first thing you got to contemplate when you're going to be trying to go on the surface of this planet, even on the ocean? I mean, seriously, is that what you got to start thinking about?
Well, a phaser array would be great, but it has two problems. One, we don't have one yet, and it'd probably be really expensive. So anybody who has their own idea for how a government would work would have to get one of these phaser arrays before they can go out there and use it. And, of course, the other problem is that as soon as you give somebody something too powerful, you run the risk of them becoming the tyrants that'll go around the world telling other people what to do because they're the ones with whatever it happens to be, the nukes or something else.
Well, see, my thing is that if you go out, let me tell you what is the most powerful thing against coercive governments. It is the concept that you don't need them, the concept of freedom, to set an example of, look, hey, we don't have big, giant weapons. We're not a threat to anybody. We don't got our own nuclear submarines. We don't have destroyers. We don't have any offensive weapons here. We're just, you know, we're just chilling. Well, that is the threat.
That's true. And unfortunately, that's something that, if this succeeds, we're going to have to deal with it at some point. But thankfully, there's another solution in the short term, which is it comes from markets, right? So markets, of course, bring us all the other innovations and wonderful goodies we have in life. And, of course, they're going to bring us a partial solution to this problem. And that solution is that countries, small countries around the world, I think there might be, I don't know, maybe at least half dozen of them, maybe a dozen or so, will sell you a flag fly on your vessel, and then they cut hands of you. They say, we don't care what you do on there. You could kill each other, you could do drugs, you could blow something up. We don't care. We'll leave you alone. As long as you don't bring some weird thing onto us. But otherwise, we'll leave you alone. You can go out there and do as you please and fly our flag. This is called a flag of convenience.
You know, there was one other method. I remember it was in 2000. There was an anti-aircraft platform between England and France sitting out there in international waters somewhere. And some fisherman had a few ships. He'd, like, you know, dock his ship there every now and then. His island had like a quarter acre or whatever it was up there. And he goes, you know what? Sealand. And he goes, you know, I'm the prince, king, Lord God, King Bufu of all I survey. It's mine now. I claim it, and here I am. And he did something. I remember at the time that he applied for nationhood with the United Nations, went through all kinds of a process to become his own principality. I mean, what do you know about that?
Well, he didn't eventually succeed, as far as I remember. And the problem is, of course, that in order to be granted membership into the United Nations, the majority of nations have to already, so basically in order to be recognized as a nation, the majority of nations already have to recognize you as a nation. And that is, you know, it's sort of a circular argument, right? In order to be a nation, you have to be recognized as a nation. And it's not something that we think is feasible, at least for us, until we become a major influence or a major power or at least seasteads in general, right? Not necessarily one of them, but maybe a big group of them, become a significant factor in international politics.
Well, I mean, would it be desirable? I mean, would you, you know, we have a million people floating around off the coast of, out in the Gulf, you know, off the coast of Panama, 100 miles out there in the sea lanes, and you're like Deep Space Nine. You're near a wormhole, man. You got a lot of traffic, you know, so all of a sudden everybody on the cruise ships are coming by saying, yo, what's up? You got people taking leave on their merchant vessels. They're going, all of a sudden, man, you're popular. Well, then you could go, hey, we can be our own nation. And then you go, I don't want to be a nation. That's why I came here, is get away from being a nation. You know, so this is, I can see where you're going with it. I want to, you know, so what we're really talking about is a way to get away out in international waters, to be out of certain jurisdictions. Maybe we need to fly the flag of a small country and so on. We kind of want to be left alone, but we're going to be small enough that hopefully we're not on anybody's radar screen, and maybe we can have our opium den brothel de la manufacturing of, you know, AR-15 lowers and get away with coming to the attention of too many people too powerful to care. I mean, is that kind of where we're going?
Essentially, except for the fact that, drugs and manufacturing weapons or anything like that would probably just be such a flagrant political hot button, especially in a country like this, that the U.S., you know, egged on by certain politicians or whatever it would happen to be, would float out there with a navy, you know, a destroyer or whatever, and say, we're going to be boarding your structure and we're taking over. Do you have anything to say? And our answer would be, well, heck no, that's a very nice-looking destroyer you got there. Come on board. Have a good time.
Yep, see, this is where I'm going. You know, we're going to have, it has to be not controversial retail manufacturing existence of, well, heck, if you're going to be that, I might as well just go to Arizona. So, you know, well, let's go. We'll go ahead and examine the technology and how this would actually happen. And I'm very excited about this because I remember when this has been attempted before, about 15 years ago, and we're going to talk about it with Seasteading just a little.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, the show must go on here and declare your independence, even though we got all of the negative news. I mean, when things get the worst is when you have the biggest change. When the things are, when the debt is the most, when the wars are going, when that, all the more motivation for us to find an alternative. And, you know, here we have Max Marty. He studied at the Muhlenberg College, earning a double major in political economy and philosophy. Graduates in 06. Then he gets his MBA with an emphasis on finance and entrepreneurship at the University of Miami. Graduates in 09. And now he's, you know, working with Seasteading. You know, he's heading up the business plan competition with a prize of $10,000. Now, let me go ahead and give you, you know, some of the samples here, some of the issues. You know, there's 12 sample Seasted business concepts. Now, if you're outside of a jurisdiction, you're, I don't know, 25 miles out. I mean, it's 3 miles or 12 miles. You go, what the heck? We'll double the 12-mile thing. We'll make it, you know, 24, 25 miles. We're out there. You don't rule us. Well, they go, yeah, we got a destroyer. But anyway, so you're out there, and let's say you had a platform. You got a platform, you build whatever you want on it. They come up with a concept. They got architectural designs on this. This has been done in the past. There have been seven-story hotels floating on the Barrier Reef off the coast of Australia. You know, there's a dive vacation for you. So, you know, this is possible. Not only possible, it's already been done. So let's go ahead and what kind of thing would you have? It'd be like medical. All right, you're out there doing, you know, FDA unapproved of medical treatments for adult stem cell research. Research or different procedures or chemicals, or I'm going to die and please somebody save my life. I go out here even because it's unregulated. Okay, well, that might have some value to a lot of people. Maybe a prison. You know, it's a floating Alcatraz for the worst criminals. Well, okay, there's a possibility there. You have, you know, we can start manufacturing things that don't have all kinds of regulations or duties, or we're socially and economically engineering people and they got to manufacture whatever the heck we say they do. You know, people that maybe they just need political asylum. They just want, man, I'm a dissident. I'm a Freedom's Phoenix publishing kind of individual, man. I need to go find me some place to live. Maybe they're doing some type of aquaculture where they're raising fish or just tourism. You know, I mean, it's a lot of things. It could be entertainment. You know, it could be the brothel de la whatever and just partay. You can have all kinds of servers for storing information outside of jurisdictions. I'll get you in trouble right there. I guarantee you that. And then you have all kinds of stuff. So these are the kinds of possibilities if you can just get away a lot of times from the regulation and the expense. Imagine you are 25 miles off the coast of Miami and you just want to live there. How much does it cost to have beachfront property? What if you're just 25 miles out? You got a speedboat, you'll get to work faster than getting on the freeway. And you live out in the clean air and ocean of and just, I'm good. So these are the kinds of things you need to start thinking about that hopefully would be of no threat to anybody. You know, you're not doing anything wrong except maybe the FDA wouldn't like you're having medical treatments they don't approve of. But by doing this, I tell you where the threat really is. You are a threat to authority by not having an authority. This is where I see the threat is going to be because it's freedom. Freedom is a threat to the bad guys. And it started, there was a thing called Oceania. You know, a lot of libertarians were all up about this back in the early 90s. They were going to build a large city 50 miles east of the Panama Canal out in the shipping lanes, out of the hurricane belt, to where you would be the center of attraction, these large ships going in and out of the Panama Canal. Great idea. And the biggest thing you had to contend with was, what laws are you going to have? Were you have a big homeowners association? What kind of constitution? What kind of a society would you create? The constitution was three times as thick as the laws. That was where a lot of the time went in. So these are things that have been thought about before. Seasteading, however, is having a lot of good economists that are associated with this. Go ahead and pick it up from there. Max, tell me, who are the people that are associated with this, with the big names that we are glad are associated with it? I got you there, Max. Yeah, Max, go ahead. Give me some of the names that are associated with this.
Well, so Peter Thiel, for example, is our primary funder, and he's done a whole bunch of libertarian and sort of high-tech ideas that he's tried to put forth after he made a whole bunch of money starting PayPal and then investing early on in Facebook. Now he's using his money to try to create sort of a libertarian, any sort of libertarian ideas that actually hold water and get us to a freer world. Our executive director was on Econ Talk, which is over in George Mason University and the Hoover Institution. That's hosted by Russ Roberts. We've got a number of sort of interesting, so we have had articles in Reason Magazine. We've been, might be getting looked something in some other magazines that you guys would know pretty soon. But yeah, we have a lot of buzz being generated around this, mostly in the academic world and in the libertarian circles, but what we'd really love to see is the average person out on the street becoming interested in what we're doing.
No, because it's exciting. Now, let's go ahead and talk about some of the actual architecture, some of the engineering involved. I mean, I'll give you an example. I put up on today, freedomsphoenix.com, for today's show, Declare Your Independence, afternoon, October 1st. If you go in there, you'll see that I put some links to some other things. One, Seasteading Institute invites you aboard the 2011 Reason Cruise. Now, this is Reason Magazine putting this on. So I'm going, hey, man, you want to hear more about this? You guys will be speaking there, having a good time. And then people see up there, I put something on a Duesenberg and the Future Car Skateboard and the Hydrolance Corporation about ground effect aircraft on the ocean. What does that have to do with seasteading? I'll tell you what it is. When the phrase is said, that's a doozy. You know, that comes from the Duesenbergs were super high quality in 20s, big money cars, but they came like the future car, the skateboard that GM is doing, where you just have a platform and four wheels. It's steer by wire. It's kind of like a VW bug. You can put whatever you want on it. Well, then you have the ground effect aircraft that just fly about 3 feet off the water. You can get really high speed. You can have heavy. So this is like your commuter car that would go from off of Miami going in, and you don't even, it's not even really a plane. It's not really a boat, but it's fast. You have the future car skateboard. What it does is it has all of the infrastructure on there, the battery, the steering, the electrical, the whatever. If you create a platform that is just has all the basics, just a big floating platform out there, and you can build what you want on it. You put whatever body, whatever housing, whatever transportation, whatever you want. So I'm looking for this. When we do the seasteading thing, I'm going, you give me the platform, I'll build whatever I want. What is the platform? Have somebody come up with the engineering of some kind of floating something that can be the foundation, the base of creating seasteading society?
Yeah, certainly. So the first thing, one of the first things that the Institute did when we were founded back in 2008 was contract with a pretty big engineering firm. And we had them basically look through all the different ideas out there for how we would design a structure that would work out in the ocean, that would be able to deal with the environment out there, you know, hurricanes or really big waves or whatever it would be, and then which we could do a number of different designs on top of. So it was called Clubstead, and it's actually a spar platform, which means it's a platform that doesn't quite anchor to the ocean floor. It sort of floats above it. And so we even had an engineering contest where we then said to a whole bunch of people out there, look, we got this design that this platform that sort of forms the base of whatever Seasteading you want. Now we want you to envision what it would look like, and we got a lot of good entrants from that contest. A bunch of them are up on our website now. Some really beautiful designs, and designs that places where people would actually want to live, love, and work.
Oh man, I'm all excited. I'm on your website. It's Seasteading, Seasteading.org. Seasteading.org. Now, where do I go to take a look at some of that? I want the audience to know, man. They're following us with this right now live. We're going to Seasteading.org, and where do I go to look at some of the designs?
So if you look under, where is it here? Community contests, and you look under past contests. then right there you can see the winning entries for our engineering contest. The first one is sort of looks Italian or maybe Venetian or something, I would say.
Yeah. Well, I'm, you know, aside from what's built on top, what's the engineering of what? Is it like an oil derrick that's floating out in the ocean, that technology?
So it's a flat platform with multiple pillars underneath that stretch into the water and keep it floating at a certain rate. This platform costs something like, well, the engineering firm estimated that it would be something close to about $100 million to build this platform. And, of course, that sounds like a lot of money, but if you compare that to, say, the cost of trying to win an election or, gosh, the cost of trying to start a country, which is, you know, impossible, then, well, you know, it's a lot of money, but it's not an unheard of amount of money, right?
No, I'm with you. I just, you know, freedom has value to a lot of people, especially when they got the money. You know, they do, PayPal and Facebook, all of a sudden 100 million's pocket change. So I get it. But the thing is that we're looking at the concept would be to create a platform that would have kind of the idea of a large oil derrick, right?
Yep. You can envision it as looking like something like an oil rig out in the ocean, except it's not. Its purpose isn't to drill, black gold out of the ground or out of your ocean floor, but really to live. So it's beautiful.
You know, one thing that could happen, you know, it could be self-sustaining economically and have seasteading, and it be an oil derrick. I'm for that. I don't know what the heck, man. Let's do it up. Well, you know, there's all kinds of stuff we're going to talk about. I want your imagination to start going. We'll be back after the news break at the top of the hour here, and then we're going to start thinking. We'll start inviting your calls. I want you to start thinking, what would you do with your freedom? You haven't even been able to even think it before. It's possible. It's happening. It's going to happen. In the end, freedom always wins. It just gets really messy first, and maybe you just want to go out in the ocean to get away from the mess. We'll talk about it more with seasteading when we come back here in just a little bit. My new friend, Max Marty, will be right back.